This is Simon Littlewood with Mark Lowdy, coming to you from Riyabu. Mark, you've just come back from the Global SME Finance Forum in Amsterdam. How are you?
Good. It was a fabulous two-day conference organized by the International Finance Corporation and the World Bank, where the big topic of discussion was how do we fill the $5 trillion funding gap to SMEs globally?
And can you share with us what some of the major preoccupations were?
Well, clearly it is that funding gap, but there are many, many facets to it. Why is it that there is even a funding gap? Why can't SMEs just avail themselves of credit when they need it? And so there was a lot of discussion about, for example, the informal nature of SMEs, the fact that many of them are one-man bands. There were some specific themes going as well, such as women entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs in emerging markets or pioneer, you know, frontier markets, markets in parts of Indochina, South and Africa as well. And so there was a lot of discussion around how to get the money to where it's needed the most.
Okay. Any other topics came up?
Well, you see, a lot of the discussion very much focused, as you would expect, on supply chain financing. In other words, financing the SME when they've already got a purchase order. Mm-hmm. So bank comes in and then finances the purchase order. That way, even before you've delivered the product or service, you can go to the bank for credit. Or financing the invoice, where you then have the ability to go to one of those invoice exchanges and you can cash out 85 or whatever percent of the value of the index, the invoice, so that you can get the cash immediately, even if you give up some margin. There was also some discussion about reverse finance, rather reverse factoring. Have you heard this term before?
I think we discussed it, yeah.
Reverse factoring is when your customer says to you, thank you for your invoice, please work with our finance arm, who will pay you straight away, and then we, the ultimate customer, will pay our finance arm. It seems a fairly disingenuous way for people to delay making payments, to be frank, at the expense of the supplier. But it seems that there were quite a number of examples cited, Puma being one, the shoemaker, the athletic shoemaker. They were there to talk about the $200 million or so that they'd already financed through reverse factoring. So there was predictably a lot of focus on credit and various ways that debt can be extended to people, credit can be given to these very unstructured SMEs.
Were there any particularly innovative solutions that caught your eye while you were there?
Well, there was one particular presentation by a company called Centrifuge, which was all about financing or finding different things to finance. The speaker, Max, was all about talking about using blockchain to finance relationships. So the theory is quite simple. You know, let's say I'm a vendor and you are my customer. Now, we may not have an invoice going at any one time, right? In other words, maybe you haven't ordered something from me for some time. Or perhaps we've got constant orders going. But rather than a third-party financier then coming in and saying, I'll finance this particular invoice or that particular purchase order, the financier says, hey, Mark and Simon, you get along so well. Mark, you have supplied Simon for 10 years. Clearly you have a good relationship going. Therefore, I'm going to finance your relationship. So I thought that was a particularly innovative way to go. I mean, it still doesn't solve the problem of SMEs actually taking out credit rather than generating cash as soon as possible. But certainly there were quite a number of those innovative solutions offered.
Yes, and I mean, we know that's a very big area of interest here in Southeast Asia. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and of course it raises the question, because at Riyabu we always raise this question, why should you take out a loan?
Yes.
Why should you have an overdraft?
Yes.
Well, your customer should be paying you on time, right?
Yes.
That's what we are all about. And so there was this particular presentation by a Goldman Sachs Foundation where I chimed in with a question, which turned into a rather large point of discussion. I hadn't intended it to be, but this is how it worked out, Simon. What happened was that during this two-way fireside chat on stage, I asked the question, and again, Goldman Sachs Foundation is doing some amazing work, working with all sorts of institutes in Bangalore and organizations all around the world to try to finance or empower small and medium enterprises and especially women. And so the question that I posed through the conference app was, do women manage to collect their invoices faster? In other words, if you are a woman entrepreneur, do you have greater sway with your customer? You know, does a customer pay a woman entrepreneur faster than a man? And this ripple went through the audience when the moderator then read out my question, because it, for the first time in the conference, I would dare to say, brought home the fact that despite all of the various financing options that were under discussion, invoice financing, reverse factoring, and all of those things, it was the first time that we'd actually put on the agenda that at the end of the day, somebody needs to pay. A customer needs to settle an invoice. And that was something that was, until that point, actually glaringly missed in the
conversation. And what answer did you get?
Don't know, was the answer. We don't know whether women have their invoices settled faster than if you're a man supplying a company. But, you know, it would be interesting to know that.
Well, to the extent that we think at Riabu that getting paid on time is a function of how well you manage the relationship with your customer, it's likely that women might be better at that, because, of course, women score highly on agreeability traits, higher than men, which means that they get on with people, they're more prepared to make compromises, and they have more even relationships.
Yes.
That's a very interesting piece of research that should be done.
Should be done. And I also thought it was interesting from the commentary that Christina from the Goldman Sachs Foundation then raised was, you know, perhaps it's the fact that that women entrepreneurs being seen as special, you know, being a thematic within the SME scene, that perhaps customers are more likely to support them and with faster payments. Who knows? Perhaps something for you to ponder. You know, if you, as a listener to our podcast, put on your customer hat, would you pay a woman entrepreneur faster than a man entrepreneur? I'll leave it to you to figure that out. But, you know, those were some of many various points of discussion.
Okay, that's great. I mean, that's a topic we're going to keep coming back to, whether you should be borrowing money if you're an SME or whether you should be expecting your customers to pay you on time. Those two are very important questions.
Yes.
You mentioned to me earlier as we were just sitting down that one of the things that came up is the question of banks as partners.
Yes. This was a topic already raised during the speech by the guest of honor, Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, who spoke very passionately about the fact that banks should go beyond loaning money. She was, as a clear ambassador on this topic of supporting SMEs, she was very clear about the fact that banks shouldn't just say, here's the cash, now go off and do something with it, but that banks should say to various customers, not only will we provide you with the cash, but we will also provide you with additional insights for how to run your business. Mm-hmm. And Joyce T from DBS Bank in Singapore had also flown in to the Global SME Finance Forum in Amsterdam to, in fact, receive a prize, an award, for the amount of work that DBS is doing with SMEs, with their business class offering. You know, she mentioned, for example, digital marketing. Now, banks aren't involved in digital marketing, but by facilitating knowledge transfer, you know, SMEs learning about digital marketing from the bank, the bank is able to go beyond just loaning money and is able to offer a whole range of pieces of expertise that go beyond finance.
And of course, you and I in the past have talked to banks like DBS, and indeed, I've interviewed some of the incubators, because some banks now are creating incubators which have a load of services which SMEs can potentially avail themselves of.
Yes, and what was interesting, Simon, about that was that so few banks do it. I mean, there's a reason why DBS won an award, because they're obviously doing it very well, but many, many other banks aren't. In fact, I also spoke with people on the sidelines, you know, in the coffee break area, who fascinating conversations. You know, you'll hear stories like, you know, I've worked for three banks. The one I'm with at the moment has this business support service, but the previous two banks that I worked at had either none at all or were doing it very badly.
And among the banks that do offer these services, are any of them offering a service which helps SMEs get paid on time? And I don't mean borrowing money or automating their billing process.
No.
No.
In short, no.
Okay.
You know, some of that knowledge transfer might be there, but clearly the banks, you know, many banks, especially those who are just at the start of business support services, are really just in their infancy.
You know, you might argue that since the core objective of any bank is to lend money at interest, that maybe this militates directly against one of their primary purposes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would think that a bank is keen to lend rather than just, you know, advise people for how not to have to lend. I get that. But I have to say that the atmosphere in the room was very different. I would say that the banks were actually quite happy to move beyond that. Mm. And the reason was that if you are, and again, one of the people I spoke to over coffee in the break was very quick to point out that if you as a bank go and help your customer, you demonstrate that you care about more than just giving a working capital loan or you know, some other sort of financing product, then the customer is going to have far greater loyalty to you. They'll love you for life, were the exact words that he used.
Yes. Do you think one of the things that a lot of people talk about now is that banks, as they've moved more and more into the digital age, have to some extent lost some of the face-to-face customer intimacy that we used to associate with banks? Are they trying to rebuild that?
They're certainly looking to change. And again, that's part of the reason why they are, while clearly wanting to continue to finance companies, why they are looking to change the way that they approach that. Why these business support services are so important. Because all of the banks realize just how much fintechs can eat their lunch. And so there is a general realization, shall we say, among all those present at the Global SME Finance Forum, that things will need to change and some sacred cows will need to be slaughtered. They will do so in different, you know, to different degrees. Some of them were also quite honest about the fact that they haven't even started on that journey yet. Others, like Union Bank in the Philippines, very sharp. You know, the chairman was there. He looked more like, you know, even the way he was dressed, he was more like Mark Zuckerberg. You know, so very, very tech savvy, very forward thinking, and very happy to say, okay, the old banking model is the past. Fintechs have taken over to such an extent that we really have to work together. That's not a cry of desperation, but purely a realization that things have changed.
So I'm an aspiring fintech. Did you hear things about what the banks are looking for in a fintech partner?
Very much so. I'm glad you asked. And in particular, there was a particularly impactful presentation by Standard Chartered, which titled 10 Things They Don't Tell You at Conferences. I'll tell you what the first four were. One was that fintechs need to realize that automation is quick, mindset change is slow. In other words, and this was in fact highlighted as the biggest issue, it's very easy to come up with a solution. You write an algorithm, you publish a website, right? Whatever the newfangled solution that you as the fintech will want to launch. But actually getting people to use it is something different. Getting people to change from the habits of how they used to do things to adopt this new solution will take time and is probably the hardest thing. So that was the first point. The three others I'll mention. One, build it from the ground up rather than trying to fix something that's already established. The analogy was, how can you repair a plane when it's flying? You can't, clearly. So do you wait for it to be on the ground or do you now actually just build a new plane? So the implication is that building it from the ground up is often a much better approach than taking a legacy. You know, renovating a house might be another analogy. Can you continue to live in the house while you're rebuilding it? Of course you can't. You want to jump in on
that? So the implication of that is that banks start working with potential partners at a very early stage in the development of their technology.
Yeah, or incubate them. Uh-huh. So that they run in parallel to the main bank, rather than trying to say, let's take the mainstream products and services that we're offering and try to rebuild them even as we continue with them.
For a bank to incubate a range of services, which are non-core services, let's face it, the reason they're doing that is because these are not things necessarily that banks are particularly good at, is going to require a different skill set from the skill set that you typically associate with bankers. Was that talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there is a happy realization now, perhaps an evolution of the perception of fintechs, that banks and fintechs are partners. It used to be that banks just saw fintechs as a threat. They're coming to eat our lunch, you know, as I was saying earlier. But as I said, that's now matured and evolved to a stage where people are very happy to acknowledge, okay, the banks need the fintechs because they're the ones who can build from the ground up, they're the ones with the fresh ideas. But in reverse, it's the fintechs that need the banks because of their existing customer relationships, their existing access to markets. Two other quick points I'll mention. One is API-enabled data sources. All well and good to say, hey, you know, you've got a fintech, that's great, just rock up to the bank, and within a day, they will somehow be able to give you an API, right, an interface that will allow your fintech solution to work with the bank. easier said than done. The devil really is in the detail to make that work. Mm-hmm. A number of the banks there were talking about the various programs that they have to make that turnkey. And the fourth and final point that I mentioned out of the 10 mentioned by Standard Chartered was don't boil the ocean. In other words, you really have to think about keeping your solution simple. If you're a fintech, it doesn't have to be all in. Sometimes it's not even about time to money, you know, how long before I can get my loan, but time to a decision on whether or not, mm-hmm. with details to be worked out later mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are lots of learnings from the Global SME Finance Forum, and it was definitely worthwhile going along. This was the fifth annual event, and I suspect that by the time we'll be there at the sixth one, that there will be even more developments.
One of the things that we talked about before, and I'm curious as to whether this came up, is that a significant number of SMEs, particularly one-man bands in certain parts of the world, are actually invisible to banks and unbanked. Did that come up at all?
Very much so. And not necessarily on stage. It did get a mention. But the problem in reaching SMEs was certainly a hot topic of discussion over lunch and in the coffee breaks. Because, again, it's all well and good to have all these great ideas, to have new fintechs, new products, new services. You know, use it on your phone, you get the app, and it'll be able to do magical things for you. But the fact of the matter is that a very, very large proportion of SMEs globally are simply not in that space where they are availing themselves of these various opportunities. During one of the presentations, I think it was the Puma Centrifuge presentation, there was a banker sitting behind me from Pakistan who raised this very issue. You know, your ideas that you're presenting here are all well and good, but how are you going to reach the $180 trillion worth of transactions that go through SMEs when currently invoice financing is only $3 trillion? What about the other $177 trillion? And so there was that recognition that only through awareness and education are SMEs actually going to be brought into the fold. It's very hard to reach an SME who's not focused on financing. They're focused on delivering a product or service.
To what extent, I absolutely agree with that, and that's fascinating, but I wonder to what extent does the current pressure to comply with financial crime compliance issues, that is for banks to really know their customers, to what extent does that militate against a desire to bring on board large numbers of small SMEs who do not have a very clear footprint?
You know? Well, to some extent, you would say that many of those small SMEs simply are in it to feed their families. Perhaps the desire to know those customers really, really well comes secondary to actually just getting to reach them. When you are, let's say, a woman entrepreneur in Myanmar, or you are starting a business in Nairobi, chances are you're going to be focused, and the bank is going to be focused much more on how are you generating cash, rather than saying, are you a legitimate player?
So I
guess the KYC topic is important for the banks, but in the context of the Global SME Finance Forum, didn't play a major role.
Okay, that's absolutely fascinating. Well, it sounds like you had a very, very interesting time in Amsterdam.
It was. I was stuck in the hotel for both days, clearly because the venue was right at the airport, so I didn't get to see much of Amsterdam. But that's okay, because what we then saw instead was companies from all around the world, not just the Netherlands. And it really felt like the United Nations. You know, there were people from all parts of Asia, from China. Cambodia sent a large delegation. I sat with them over dinner on the Monday night. There were people from Africa, from Latin America, clearly also from Europe. The atmosphere in the room was certainly one where SMEs are the lifeblood. They need our support. How do we best make that work?
At any point, did the topic of SMEs being disadvantaged in terms of payments and cash flow compared to larger companies come up?
Only in the context of supply chain financing.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, there was very little time or breath spent on saying, you know, large companies need to pay smaller companies further. I also didn't hear what I half suspected we might hear, which was that companies are in some jurisdictions legally obliged to pay their small suppliers, such as the UK and Australia. That didn't get much of a look in. As I was saying earlier, a lot of it was focused on curing the symptom rather than the cause.
Yeah, and I think, you know, perhaps we feel, that at Riabu, that fairness, particularly to SMEs, might be as important or more important than a desire to simply lend them more money. Because whether or not you have the cash to run the business is an existential issue for many SMEs.
Yes. Well, if more SMEs had been present, I wonder whether that might have gotten more of a look in. You have to remember that the Global SME Finance Forum was all about the financiers.
Yeah.
We actually didn't get to see many people who were actually doing a tough as an SME on the ground. I mean, obviously Riabu was one, but it would have been enlightening actually to hear from, you know, the word on the ground. And some of those issues, some of those more bread and butter issues that Riabu cares about might have had more of a look in than, you know, supply chain financing.
Yes, so the voice of the SME really needs to be heard a bit more. Mark Lowdy, thank you very much. That's absolutely fascinating.
We'd love to hear your comments, of course. Maybe you were at the SME Finance Forum. You didn't say hello. Here's your chance to do so in the comments box.